of the board, staff, underwriters, and donors of Voice of Vashon. And there we go. Thanks for being with us today, everyone. Shiny, happy people. I think you all know why I choose that song. It's by a band called REM. And first time I got into recovery years ago, I went to my first meeting and I saw a bunch of people circle up at the end of the meeting. And when I looked around, they kind of reminded me of shiny, happy people. And that's about the same time that song came out by REM. Good afternoon. I'm Tom Walston with you on our weekly Adventures in Recovery here at KVSHLP Vashon, your island connection. We're so lucky to have this radio station here for our little island community. And I really appreciate you listening and tuning in every week. And if you can't tune in during the airtime, just go to our website, voiceofvashon.org, and you can archive any one of our many, many shows anytime you want. So it's all here just for you. We've got a real interesting guest with us today, and this guest is named Baruch, and we're going to hear more about. Well, I'm going to probably set the theme by saying a quote from someone that I studied under for a long time. And the quote goes, "When you change the way you look at things, the things you look at change." So we're going to hear from Baruch in just a moment, right after this. Put you in the mood of healing today. That's Stephen McNamara gracing us with his acoustic guitar. Anyway, would you join me in welcoming Baruch? And he's going to talk today about another form of recovery, and that is kind of healing from within. Welcome, Baruch.
Thanks, Tom. Pleasure to be here with you.
So happy to have you here. I know you were on Voice of Vashon a while back, but we're going all the way back to a show we used to have called Raising the Vibe. Do you remember that back in?
I do. Quite a while ago. Pleasure to be back.
Speaking of being able to go into the archives, I was able to get back into that show and looking that up, and I really got some really good insight on some of the work that you do, and a lot of it is in conjunction to your wife, and you really are centered in the healing aspect of both physical, spiritual, and emotional. Would you agree?
Yes.
How'd you get into this?
I'd say the biggest part is living 65 years on this planet.
Okay.
And moving through all the things we all move through, challenges and beautiful moments and darkness and light. I've worked... Let's see, this year is 40 years since med school graduation.
Yikes.
And been working with people on a healing path for a long time. And half my work's been mental health. That's been a particular focus. And also observing people that have tragedy in their life. And then it's like a fork in the road. And some people move what's happened in the past and immersed in the triggers and reactivity and fixation on that. And others learn their lesson and move on, and in some way are able to accept what they can't fix and move forward in their life.
Boy, that can get pretty deep.
Yeah.
I mean, for some of us, we refer to that as adverse childhood experiences, things that may have happened that we had no control over, but it has the tendency to create certain patterns that we repeat in different ways, and sometimes it comes out sideways, and we don't understand why we keep going down the same path, right?
For sure. Yeah. They say this thing they say about 90% of our thoughts are the same day after day. Mm-hmm. And if we have wounds we've suffered that have created negative thinking and thought patterns that we're kind of stuck in, mm-hmm. then that's what we're repeating day to day. When I teach not as a master, but as a practitioner. And a lot of that's based on experiences I've had in life. And two things I'll mention that are directly relevant to this. One was, there was a moment in my life when I realized that I had a choice between focusing on darkness and focusing on light, focusing on what was bad in the world and in my life, or focusing on what is good. I have this notion that if you read a book that someone wrote about all the goodness in the world, you'd think, oh, what a beautiful world. And if you read a book about all the darkness in the world, you'd think, oh, what a terrible world. Mm. So which is it? And I think the answer is both. It's everything. And so what are you going to focus on? And one thing that's helped me a lot is to not focus on darkness, but focus on light. And that's allowed me to be a happier person. There is a very important action step. First is looking right at the darkness, looking right at the challenge, looking right at the trauma, whatever it is that in the world and in ourself that keeps us back from being relaxed, happy, and open.
Yeah.
And then doing what we can to heal that thing, and then turning to accepting what we can't heal, and then turning to the light and the beauty. And that's often most easily expressed as ingratitude.
Ingratitude. So important. And you know, when the theory and the concept you're referring to reminds me of how do you get beyond, and how do you heal, and how do you grow? H is you got to get honest. O, you have to be open-minded. And the W is you have to have the willingness. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
How do you heal? It's like, well, I'll tell you. H-O-W. And we apply that to a lot of our recovery that may deal with substance issues. Being a person in long-term recovery myself, I can identify with a lot of the tools that I've been given that have helped other people and that have worked. So when we keep repeating things, and a lot of times, if it was alcohol, if it was pills, if it was some other form of a substance, really, when it comes right down to it, it was self-medicating. What are you self-medicating from? What is the pain that you're treating for yourself? And if that's the only way you know how to treat it, open your mind up and become willing to learn new concepts that are not harmful and that aren't going to potentially kill you. So.
Yes, absolutely. I guess one of the things that brings up for me is that what's such a common teaching in spiritual paths and mental health and wellness paths, which is stepping back and looking at what you're thinking, stepping back and looking at what you're feeling, and somehow stepping back from being so caught up in it that you can't see it clearly, to stepping back and just having relationship with those parts of ourselves and the world that allows us to be a little calmer and level-headed in how we're working with it. I have this other belief that suffering is almost always about some story we're telling ourselves. That pain, there's a great, to paraphrase Stephen Levine, If you have a body, you will have pain every day. Emotional pain, physical pain, sometimes a little, sometimes a lot. Pain happens in the body. Suffering happens in the mind. That's when the mind amplifies the pain and tells story about it and imagines worst case scenario futures and spins it out. Pain inevitable, suffering reducible. And that key thing, and for me, it relates a lot to letting go of story.
Okay. So when you say story, that could be maybe a false belief system from maybe when a person was growing up, you were told things that were untrue about yourself. You're never going to amount to much. You're just like your father, or you're just like so-and-so. You're just like, you know, no, you're just like you, you know. Define your own self and erase any of the lies that may have been fed to you by people that you were supposed to trust and believe in.
Yeah, and recognize that the story that you're telling yourself is a fictional piece. It's not capital R reality, it's lowercase r reality.
Okay, yeah.
Capital R reality, as I understand it, can't really even be expressed in words, but it's something very simple and clear and clean and, to me, radiant and beautiful that underlies all the stories we tell. We need stories to get through our day, but there's other stories, but some of those stories cause suffering. Some of those stories are triggered by things that have happened to us. And so for me, my core spiritual psychological practice is when I feel really bad, when I'm suffering, I ask myself, what am I thinking? What story am I telling myself? And then there's a test. Is there an action step? That thing that I'm stuck on that's causing me to suffer. Okay. Is there something I need to do about that? I'm in an abusive relationship. There's something to do about that. But most of the time in my life, I'm just spinning my wheels. I'm stuck in a rut. And I've already done what I can about that thing. And after looking right at it, then I can distract myself from that and look at something beautiful, express gratitude for things.
I love that. Because according to what I've read in your works, gratitude plays a huge role, if I'm not mistaken. Would you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And evidence-based. As a family doctor, I'm very much into evidence-based practices. And there's been good studies on gratitude, one that dealt with chronic disease and one that dealt with depression. And in one study, I don't remember which was which, people expressed five things they're grateful for once a week. Another study, they expressed gratitude for one thing every day. And that made a difference. It's that thing about choice. It's that thing about programming your mind with positive things, real things. There's always real things to be grateful for in our life. Grateful for this breath, for this air. Simple things, meaningful things. Yeah, and it makes a difference. It
makes a huge difference. And you know what, folks? We're going to hear more about the role that gratitude plays in our lives with Baruch right after this.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the whispering wind. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the birds in the spring. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the moonlit night. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the stars so bright. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the wonder in me. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the way I feel. Thanks. Thanks for the animals, thanks for the land, thanks for the people everywhere. Thanks a lot. Thanks for all I've got. Thanks for all I've got.
Thanks a lot. What a beautiful song.
Love that.
And it really sets the tone for today's topic. And that, by the way, is Thanks a Lot by... I can't see where I put it here on Spotify. Mm-hmm. I'll play it again sometime in the near future, and you'll find out, too. But if you just Google Thanks a Lot, that's I think it's Rafi.
You said that before. Rafi, yeah, you told me.
It's Rafi. So a lot of good stuff, a lot of really good positive messages, too. So gratitude plays a big, big role. And Baruch has some tips for you folks as far as how you can practice that or how you can start unlocking the true and happy you that's inside of you.
I feel like we've talked about some conceptual ideas, and that's really important. And those have been huge for me, those realizations that prompt change. And then there's the part about what do we do every day? It's true in so much in healing from physical injuries and also our psycho-spiritual health. What can we do every day to feel better and to sustain health? And one is expressing gratitude. And one thing that we do in my family is at dinner time, whoever's at the table, guests or family, we always express gratitude for one or more things before we eat. And to me, it's our evidence-based hit of gratitude that's going to improve our health. So I think that's a core one. It's also something to pull out whenever you feel badly about something. Then without not the part about analyzing and working with that thing, but the part about take time also to express gratitude for all the beautiful and good things in your life.
And maybe while you're having a meal, also everybody putting their phones somewhere where they're not going to be making reference to looking at their phones every 5 minutes.
Phones face down, not used at the table. Yeah, that's another thing. Habits that I suggest as daily practices. One is getting out in nature. Take a walk and get out in nature. Walking and in nature is different than, oh, I move a lot at my job because there's stress at work and there's preoccupation. Mm-hmm. It's really good for our physical, psychological, spiritual health to walk in nature and to walk somewhere. Another is have some practice that helps you focus and quiets your busy mind. I have to do that. My mind is so busy. And so practices can be like meditation or body scan meditation, mm-hmm. but it can also be playing a game. For me, pickleball is a spiritual practice because I can't think about anything else while I'm playing pickleball.
Good point.
And that really helps. So those are things that really help. Another thing I wanted to say is that Eckhart Tolle, who's such a beautiful writer about the letting go of story piece, he also says that if you're feeling pretty okay in your life, then you can work on feeling better. But if you're really struggling and you're really facing big challenges, you know what you've got something to push off against. And people that are moving through some big stuff or chronic things can make progress much faster.
Oh, yeah.
They really know what they don't want, and that helps define what they want.
Good point. Very good point. Oftentimes you'll hear people say they had to reach a bottom before they could see up. But you don't have to. I mean, there's different forms of bottoms, too. In alcoholism, we refer to it either as a low-bottom drunk or a high-bottom drunk. It's however many yets you either have or haven't reached yet.
Yeah.
Right? I never had a DUI, but that was a yet. Had I not sobered up when I did, that was inevitable. It was going to happen sooner or later. As a bartender for 20 years, I was driving home drunk after every single night from work, and miraculously enough, I never hurt anybody, never got a DUI, and I don't know, I guess I had a guardian angel looking over me or something, but you don't have to let yourself get ultimately down too low before you turn around.
Yeah, and in the recovery from or with addiction, which relates so much to everybody that isn't dealing with that, but it's in that context that I learned about it, working with so many people that were actively addicted to substances. Mm-hmm. And that's the fork in the road that I mentioned before, is I remember having a patient who was 16 and she'd been clean for 4 years.
Wow.
And that young woman was incredible. The self-awareness she had, the clarity, she had the wisdom of easily of someone 10 years older than her.
Well, to get clean and sober when you're 12 years old.
That's pretty dark.
That's incredible.
But people, I saw that so many times, moving through challenge and finding a way to step back, finding a way to forge a path that isn't caught up, that deals with the challenge, but isn't immersed in it, isn't caught up in it, makes for a very powerful person.
I guess. Dang. And then to spend the rest of, well, in that particular case, sober since 12 years old, at your interaction with this person was at 16.
Yeah.
They've obviously started doing some serious work on themselves.
All the therapy, all the meetings, all the, yeah, so much. It's the gift in the wound. I'm not someone who goes so far as to say we should embrace or be glad we have something terrible happen in our life. That's cool if you can. But there's always a silver lining, and growth is the big silver lining in challenges.
Especially when you're doing readings by like Gabor Mate about the fact that so much of addiction is trauma-based. There's probably, for a lot of people, some serious stuff that they may have experienced at a young age. How do you grow through that? I mean, you mentioned you could use that as a jumping off point, as a catalyst to start your healing. Because you're not responsible for that. But however, you are responsible for your behaviors going forward from that.
Yeah, it makes me think about one of the things that I've taught to healthcare people is behavior change. And there's very good evidence that the affirmative methods of behavior change work the best. Motivational interviewing and appreciative inquiry, which I won't get into, but those are specific examples. But the essence of that is that if we want to make change in our life, we need to first believe in ourselves and maybe look back at successes, even small ones that we've had before in our life in making change. And we need to have a clear vision of what we want. I think that's huge, that anybody in recovery is, what do I want my life to look like in 5 years?
Mm-hmm.
And once we do that, then we can take the baby steps. But first building what confidence we can, even if it's a tiny bit, any bit helps. And then a clear vision of where we want to go.
And the most successful people, in my opinion, that are in recovery are people that incorporate of some form of service into their recovery. That's why if you go to a 12-step group or a support group, you usually find opportunities to get a service position. It might be something as simple as being a greeter or making coffee or setting up the room before the meeting, or finding some way to be of service. It might be volunteer work. It might be any number of things. It might be different for everybody. But just doing something that gets you outside of yourself is going to have a ripple effect in helping others and in return helping yourself.
It's been huge in my life. There was a point in my life when I was 21, left the country, wanted to figure out, was I going to go to med school? What am I going to do? And I wasn't a very happy kid. And I realized that. I realized, if instead of being a laboratory animal doing research, that if I work with people and I can be of service to them, that's going to make me, it wasn't altruistic. I remember it clearly. It was, that's going to make me a happier person. And I've been leaning into that for a long time. And that's the win-win thing. Find something to do of service to help somebody. And it's the fastest path to happiness, to feeling good about yourself. We all need help with our self-esteem. I'm still working with that. And I get boosts for it whenever I do something to help somebody else.
Well, folks, that just goes to show you, if you want some better self-esteem, start doing more esteemable things. And being of service is very, esteemable. Well, I've really appreciated having you with us today, Baruch, and I hope you can come back again with us sometime.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And if you want to learn more, you might want to go onto his website, which is oneloveawakening.com, and that'll give you an opportunity to learn a lot more about some of the services and some of the opportunities to heal from Baruch Roeder directly.
Yeah, and that's a free online course that, with exercises, pretty substantial piece if you work through it, that I hope is of service to you, that my wife, Veronica Firmos, and I created together. That's our website, oneloveawakening.com.
oneloveawakening.com. We'll be with you again next week, everybody, every Tuesday at 1:30.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for the sun in the sky. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the clouds so high. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the whispering wind. Thanks a lot. Thanks for the birds in the spring.